UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind of it?
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, Senator.
Ares 31, me neither.
71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And it was anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Off this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Emergency 1095. Yeah, something just passed over us. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911, you guys busy?
You would just call about the UFOs, is that?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there. Same airplanes.
And it is dispatched.
Okay.
Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, Bob, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome to the show, everyone, wherever in the world you are listening from tonight. We have a great show lined up tonight. Melissa from Florida has been a first responder for over 29 years. And boy, has she had some paranormal experiences on the job. Melissa's experiences has been featured on the new season of the TV show Paranormal 911, and we'll be sharing some of those with us tonight. But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. I would like to welcome Melissa to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you for coming on today. It's great to have you on.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You've been a first responder for 29 years, and you're going to be sharing some of your paranormal experiences you've had while you've been a paramedic?
Yes. I was a firefighter paramedic for 25 years. I retired in 2016. And now for the last 3.5 years, I work on an ambulance here in Florida. I was 19 when I became a firefighter. And the first month that I worked there, we actually had 2 firemen that were killed in the line of duty. Which was very, very traumatic for pretty much all the firemen here in the county. And, you know, when you're faced with your own mortality like that, it has a huge impact on you. And, you know, back then, nobody really ever talked about the paranormal. I mean, if you came into the firehouse and, you know, you told people that you saw ghosts, I mean, they would look at you funny, seriously. But, there were some things that happened in some of the firehouses, you know, after those firemen died, and people kind of got together and started to talk about it. Typically, firehouses are one of those places where you just attract spirits. You know, if you run a call and someone's died, you run a cardiac arrest, you know, someone's died, you go to the hospital all the time, there's so much death in there. Sometimes you can bring things back. One of the things that happened to me was I worked at a station that was in the south part of our county as one of my first assignments working at the fire department. And one of the things that happened there was we had a bunk room that was all common area. And my bunk was next to a long hallway that went to the restrooms. And just about every night that I worked there, I could hear someone in little high heels walking up and down that hallway pretty much all night long. And it got to the point where, you know, I would wear earplugs because it would literally, whatever it was, would just walk down the hallway and it would make a right turn and it would walk up to the doorway where my bunk was and just stop. Now that was really crazy. So things like that, I don't know if that person was someone that they brought home from a call or whatever, but it was a woman in high heels. I never forgot that. That was one of my first experiences that I had there. Other things that happened, we had a fire station that is now an ambulance station. And I was just talking about this with one of my supervisors the other day. When I first went to work there in 1997, that station kind of already had a reputation for being haunted. And what happened to me was, is we had a bunk room that was in the front of the station. It was like an officer's bunk room. And since I was the only woman on duty, I had to sleep in that one because we were segregated at that time. So one night I had the door open and there was a flow from the air conditioning and I was just reading, you know, on my Kindle, and I just kind of felt something come in, and I put down my Kindle and I just sat there and it was perfectly dark and I felt something sit on the end of my bed. I felt the whole bed move down, and that really scared me because, you know, if something can make the whole bed move like that, that's really scary. And I remember like jumping up and running into the other part of the station where the other people were. That was really scary. I had a colleague that him and his partner were so scared one night because they thought they'd seen someone in the station that they actually got into the fire truck, started it up, and they pulled it down to the end of the bay outside, and they slept in the fire truck for the rest of the shift. That's pretty scary. But I'm currently working on a book right now about haunted fire stations. And my friend Ting Rapa, who was in season one of Paranormal 911, she actually was kind enough to write the foreword for me for that book. And in the foreword, she talks about an experience that her and I had at that same fire station. We were in the bunk room and we had the light turned down, and it was just on a dimmer so we could both read. And we were both in bed. There's like a little line of lockers that separated us to give us some private space. And all of a sudden, the switch on the wall clicked off and the lights went out. And she got really, really scared. And she just said, "Did you do that?" And I said, "No, that wasn't me." And that was kind of scary too. We had just different things go on at that station. You know, you'd be sitting in the dispatch office and somebody would walk by the window. You could see them out of the corner of your eye. You could hear doors opening and closing sometimes. What I found out when I worked to work on the ambulance side of our emergency medical services is after all these years, you know, it'd been over 20 years since I experienced some of that stuff there. I found out that this last year when we had Hurricane Dorian come through and we had people billeted in that station, that there were a group of people that actually refused to sleep in that same area because in the middle of the night, they'd heard things moving around, people walking around, items moving. So, yeah, so, you know, the hauntings and stuff continue over there, even though it's been renovated and everything like that. So some of the things that have happened, I worked in a station at the south part of the county where we used to see things pretty much on a regular basis. It was a really old area of the county. It was a seaside village kind of thing. Nothing had really changed for probably 100 years. I mean, a few houses and subdivisions had been put in, but for the most part, nothing had really changed. It was still the same vibe down there, very off the beaten track. And I worked down there for almost 10 years with the same partner, and him and I used to experience things all the time. There was a road that bisected the middle of our district that was very, very old, and we would have periodically car accidents or medical emergencies. There was nothing down there but a tree farm and some hunting camps. And there were a few times that we were driving down that road and we would see people walking on the side of the road, like dressed in old clothes. Once we went through an area that's a really negative area and we saw a shadow that completely blocked out the entire road. That night we were driving along and we saw this shadow, and it kind of covered the entire roadway, and it was so dark, it was darker than the night, and our headlights just kind of got sucked into it. and it went across. And after about a minute or so, I said to him, I said, did you see that? And he said, yeah. And he said something stupid like, was that a bear? And I'm like, no, that wasn't a bear. So that things like that would happen all the time. Our station down there actually sat on a part of the city that had been an old encampment for Native Americans that lived down there. We used to see things in the backyard all the time. There were woods behind, and sometimes we'd see lights. You'd hear noises. And I mean, not just animal noises and things, but, you know, occasionally we'd see like a person out in the woods and then they would be gone. It was very, very strange. And occasionally we'd have activity in the station. Same thing. You have somebody walk by a window. You'd see somebody walk by. Nobody would be there. The door handles would jangle. One time the door actually opened on me, and it was a big, heavy metal door that, I mean, you actually have to really pull it to get it open. And the whole door opened up and closed again. So that was really unique. One of the most haunted stations that I worked at was in the middle of the county, and that station serviced a small area that was very concentrated with substance abuse treatment centers, work release centers. There was a state prison, a county prison. There was a sex offender facility there. There were a lot of our clientele there was very, how can I say, not on the up and up. It just kind of seemed like all of our clientele there were either prisoners or we really never got to run calls on like regular citizens. You know, we were always going in the prison and stuff. And at that station, it was funny. My two partners there would never go. We had two parts to our station. We had the fire station, and then we had a training facility on the other side. And after about 6 o'clock at night, my two partners would never go next door. I mean, they would only go in the front door to use the restroom, and that was it. They would not go in the rest of the station. And, you know, if you want to shower, you have to go in the locker room. I had many, many times where I was in the locker room and I was using the restroom, and the door to the restroom just kind of like jiggled open and swung in on me, or I heard voices. I've had my locker open before, things like that. Out on the property itself, I've seen shadow people. I was actually standing out at the driveway one time and I saw a shadow person. It was perfectly black and it looked exactly like a person. I mean, the whole outline of everything. And I saw them walk around the back of the station. I saw them come around the corner and I saw them walk through the light, and they blocked out the light. It was perfectly black and it crossed the bay and went into the station. I saw that. I've seen light anomalies out there. The whole history of that area out there was very kind of wild back in the day. There were people that had moonshine stills back there. There's always been an air of nefarious things going on in that area. So now that, you know, there are all these prisons out there, it's just a really, it's kind of like a vortex for bad things, you know. And that was really, really an experience working there. Probably about every night I slept at that station, I was laying in bed and there was a window next to my bunk. And about almost every night that I slept there, I felt that there was a man in that corner and he would talk to me while I was sleeping. And I would literally wake up in the morning and be talking to him. And that was really a crazy experience there. But, you know, all the stations are pretty much like that. Everybody's got their stories. Everybody in the fire department and EMS and police, they all have their stories about crazy things that they've experienced. So one fire station that I worked at was in the south side of the county, and it was in kind of a swampy area next to a big lake that we have here. And it was a really, really rural kind of coastal hammock, palm trees and hardwood trees, kind of a low-lying area. And the property that the fire station sits on had originally had a house in the back. And we had a shed where we would keep our lawn equipment and stuff, and like a little overhang for everything. And it actually sat on the old foundation of where this house once sat. And probably about maybe 3 months before I was stationed there, somebody was out cutting grass, and they saw in the bushes back there a bottle kind of sticking up out of the ground. And they said, wow, this is kind of like a cool old moonshine bottle. This is really cool. So they took it out and they washed it off and they brought it in the station and they put it on the back area where we keep all of our lawn equipment and everything. Well, we had somebody go through who was kind of like a neat freak and went through that back area and basically threw away everything that was like non-mission essential. Well, one of the things that they threw out was that moonshine bottle. Well, as soon as that moonshine bottle went in the trash, we began to have all these problems there. We would go to sleep at night and we have those large fluorescent lights that are plastic covered in the ceiling that hold like four bulbs each. So what started was is that we probably had maybe like 12 of those that went through the whole length of the station. It was a very small station. Well, my partner and I would wake up every single morning and every one of those lights would be hanging open. Now, when you open those lights, they make like a really loud, scratchy plastic sound. You can't open that without making noise. And every morning, every single one of those lights would be hanging open. And the scary thing about it was, is that one was directly over my bed where I slept and I never heard it. That was so scary. So we had other things happen. I mean, my partner would get mad at me all the time because he's like, why are you trying to get in the bathroom? You know, I'm taking a shower. You know, the door would jiggle and something would pull on it. And he would think that it was me. And I would say, you know, I'm not going to do that. You know, that's so something would do that, open the doors, trying to think what else. We would try to do our workouts at night in the yard, you know, do a little lap running around the station. And we finally had to stop doing that because we started to see like shadows like move in the woods behind the station. It was really, really scary. The vibe of it was just so strange. So what happened was, is that finally it got to be such a problem that my friend Ting, who worked at the fire department with me, she's a paranormal investigator. She actually came in with her team and investigated that station. And what we found out was, is that there was a man who lived in that house where the foundation was behind the station, and he had a moonshine still. And he was an African-American man, and he was making all kinds of trouble and causing all these issues at the station because he'd kind of been not treated so well by the police when he was alive, which was probably the 1920s. It was like the time of segregation in the South. And he would see our uniforms, and he couldn't understand that we were firemen and not police. So he would do things around the station and cause problems and scare us and different things. So when we figured that out, we explained to him, hey, you know, you can't do this. You know, this is your area is outside and we're sorry that your bottle got thrown away. And we just explained to him, you know, can we just live peacefully together and coexist? And what ended up happening was, is he ended up asking for some corn, like some, you know, like the corn that you feed animals. He wanted, that's what you make moonshine mash out of, is corn. And all he asked for was periodically, we just take some like animal corn and throw it in the backyard. And that seemed to lay the ghost. And then he never bothered us again after that. So that was really a unique situation. That was really scary because we had our weight equipment out in the bay. And I went out in the bay one night and I was going to do a little workout. And I witnessed a weight lift up and then crash back down. It was so loud and it just scared me. It scared me so much, you know, because, you know, if you're around the paranormal and stuff, you kind of have to work beyond that fear if you really want to learn anything. But I'm just as scared as the next person. You know, if I see a full body person or something move like that, I mean, I'm going to run just like the next person. We had one call, when I worked in that really rural area that I told you about, we saw that shadow crossing the road. I call that the land that time forgot because it's just literally so rural. I mean, nothing's really changed probably since the end of the Civil War. I mean, you have some houses and stuff, but it hasn't really grown any. It's very kind of a stagnant seaside community. And we had an accident one time where there was a man riding a motorcycle and he was killed. And he was just so, his body was just so mangled up. We just covered him up. We didn't try to, we left it. We couldn't get his ID off him. We left that for the coroner because he was just in such a condition. We didn't want to move the body. So he just became a John Doe. And I never figured out his name for my report that night. He just ended up being a John Doe. We had to wait for, you know, the traffic homicide to show up and wait for the coroner to show up. And then we were released and we went back to the station. And by that time, it was about 10 o'clock at night. And I had gone outside to get something out of my car. And psychically, I felt that man walk up to me and he asked me what happened to me. It happened so fast. He hadn't realized he died. And I just stopped and I said, well, you've died. And in the course of our conversation, he told me his name. Now, I never knew his name. And the next shift we came in, there was an article in the paper about the accident and it had his name because they'd been able to locate his next of kin. And the name that he gave me that night when he showed up was the name that was in the newspaper. And that freaked me out because I told my partner and he said, how did you know? And I said, you know how I know, you know, I can communicate with spirits, you know. But that was just one case of people following us back to the station. You know, that actually used to happen all the time. When I first got into the fire department, like way back in the 90s, one thing that used to happen is when we would have these really terrible motorcycle accidents. Because, you know, I was originally from Daytona Beach, and I used to work all the big bike weeks every year where we had, you know, almost a million bikers come into town. And, you know, naturally you have accidents, you know, people don't always have a lot of practice riding motorcycles and they get into bad scrapes. You know, usually we have, you know, medium amount of deaths, you know, for the most part, it's not too bad these days. Everybody's trying to wear helmets, but back in those days, I mean, we would have terrible accidents. So whenever we would have somebody pass away, you know, they'd be a trauma alert. We'd be working on them. Sometimes they'd die on the way to the hospital. Well, one thing that happened to me early on in my career, and it's kind of stayed with me the whole time, is I never really feel too bad about the people that pass away because, like, could I have done more or anything like that? Because never fail, at the night after the call, that person visits me in my dream. I see their face and they say to me, I'm okay. Don't worry. I'm okay. I cannot tell you that has happened to me dozens and dozens and dozens of times. And that really has helped me deal with a lot of the things that we see on the job. And that's really an odd thing, but it's a very comforting thing. So it kind of freaks me out a little that, you know, the person's kind of following me around for a little bit after the call, but, I don't have to, there's no spirit attachments that happen. It's just, I don't know. It's just their way of saying, hey, I'm good. You know, I'm on the other side and I'm good. So that's kind of comforting. That's helped me deal with a lot of things. My friend Ting was in episode 11 of season 1 of Paranormal 911. I didn't even know that she was going to be on that show. And she put a Facebook post up and she says, well, you know, they've been green lighted for season 2 and they're looking for first responders to come and tell their story and maybe be featured on the TV show. So I responded and I said, yeah, you know, I said, here's my phone, you know, if you want to give him my phone number, hey, yeah, absolutely. So what she did was she called me and, you know, we talked for a while and she kind of gave me the lowdown. She explained to me how the TV process works. And she said, you know, think of two, she goes, I know all kinds of crazy stuff used to happen to you on the job. So she says, think of two separate things that happened to you in your career that like really stood out, you know, and, so I thought about it and I told her the story of what happened to me at a house fire in that old town, the town that time forgot, that old town that I used to work in. And she called the producers and told them, like, hit the high points of that story. And they were very interested. They called me back that day because what happened to me on that call was so crazy. Nothing like that has ever happened to me since. That's probably one of the most profound things that has ever happened to me on a call. And it was very, very scary. It happened about 15 years ago, happened in 2005. So that's like what, 15 years ago, spring of 2005. So like I said, we live in a really rural community. There's a lot of little old style wood heart pine fishing cabins, you know, very 1940s, 1930s type buildings. And just kind of clustered around where we worked and everything. And what happened was that there was a man and a wife that had lived in one of these for probably, oh, I don't know, 30 years. And he went out to go shopping and his wife wasn't feeling good. So she laid down to take a nap. And when he came back, she had died. She was unresponsive. And he called 911 and we went over there. And it was too late. You know, she'd been down too long, you know, and we had to tell him that, you know, we were unable to resuscitate her. It was a really bad situation because I could tell that they were very close. You know, I always feel that because me and my husband are very close, you know, him and I've been through the whole military thing and I could just feel that. And I felt pretty bad for him. You know, he was really tore up about it. So, but, cut back 4 months later and it is about 3 o'clock in the morning and we get a call for a structure fire. And their house was probably about a mile and a half down the road. I mean, you're only talking about like 5 minutes. You know, if you take the time to put on your gear, get in the truck, we're only talking about 5 or 6 minutes. So what had happened was, is that he was actually out of town, come to find out. He was in Orlando visiting family and his house was locked up, nobody home. And his newspaper man was on the street delivering newspapers in the middle of the night. And he saw this house on fire and there was a giant hole like in the middle of the top of it and fire, it had vented and fire was coming out. So they called 911 and we go down there and they confirmed that it was a working structure fire. And, you know, we called for all kinds of backup because it was an outlying area and we went over there. And I really remember this call because it's the only time in my entire career that I have kicked a door open. And, you know, I went up there with the tools that I needed to do extrication on the door, you know, to do forcible entry. I just got tired of trying to wedge that Halligan tool in the crack of the door. And it was just this wood door on this old 1940s house. So I just put my leg up and kicked the crap out of it. And the door flew open. We go in there. The fire had already vented. Everything was just black with soot. You know, it had just kind of cooked down. It looked like it had been burning for a really long time. So we just knocked everything down. Some of the other firemen showed up. We just did salvage and overhaul and everything. And we just waited for the fire marshal to get there to figure out, you know, what caused the fire. Because it just kind of seemed to be concentrated to this one area of the living room. And it just burned straight up. The two bedrooms on the side, except for being black with soot, were like virtually untouched. So me and my partner are there and everybody else has gone back to the station because it's like 6 a.m. at this point and everybody's shift changes at 7. And we're waiting for the fire marshal and waiting for the owner to come from Orlando. So I'm sitting on the front porch and I just had a feeling that I should go back in the house. And I can't tell you why. I don't know why it happened. I don't know why I felt that way. I don't know if I was being called, but I walked into the front of the house and there was a bedroom on the side that we'd searched and nobody was there. I mean, no pets, no nothing. Nobody was there. And I came into the room and when I passed the threshold of the bedroom, my ears popped like I was on a plane. Now, I have done a lot of travel on planes and I've been in the mountains here and when you're on a plane, your ear pops a certain way. It's like, you know what I mean? You have to chew gum. I mean, it's really strong when you're on a plane. And my ear popped like I was on a plane. That has never happened to me before. I could feel the pressure changing in the room. It was insane. And the next thing that happened was there was a dresser there with a TV on it, and the TV started flickering on. Now, I know for a fact that the power guy has come around to the other side of the house and pulled the meter, so I know there's no electric to this house, but yet I'm watching this TV go off and on. The bed is right there on my right, and out of nowhere, the covers were just dragged off the bed. They just dragged right off the bed. It was almost like a sail. They just flew through the air. And it was so crazy because everything was just black, but yet the covers underneath the coverlet were all white. It was really crazy. It was like a stark contrast and they just drug right off the bed. I'm standing there and it's kind of like one of those moments where you get so scared that you just can't move. And I'm watching this and in front of me, I feel the presence of this woman. And it's the woman from the house. It's the woman that we called 4 months earlier, and she's in front of me. And mentally, I hear her say to me, "I wanted someone to know how I died." And right then, I felt her spirit energy enter my body, and I had difficulty breathing. I had severe chest pain, and it was like her spirit was just squeezing my heart. And I realized she'd had a heart attack. That's how she died. I thought I was dying. It almost dropped me on the floor. It was so intense. I felt like I was dying inside. To this day, I don't know how I made it outside of the house. I don't know if I, you know, just somehow crawled out. I don't know. All I know is I have no idea how I got from the bedroom back to the front steps of the house. And I just sat there kind of like in a state of shock, and I was drinking water. Right then, our truck is sitting. I can see our fire truck. It's parked right in front. We still have a hose line pulled up in case we have, you know, hot spots or anything. Right then, a hose let loose on our truck. A hose burst. Boom. And all this water ran straight down onto our exhaust manifold. And this huge, huge cloud of steam came up. It was like Armageddon. I'd never seen anything like that. The pump emptied. And then it started making this screaming noise because, you know, once you empty a pump out of water, it just starts to cavitate and make this screeching sound. And I could see my partner running across the yard to shut off the truck because obviously we've had this catastrophic failure. It was just the most surreal, crazy thing that has ever happened to me on a call. And, you know, when the fire marshal showed up on that call, he wanted to know who had messed up that bedroom. And you know, it was crazy because all the covers were just pulled off the bed. And he thought somebody was just horsing around in there, you know, who's dragging stuff around and messing stuff up and everything. Do you know he ended up calling everybody that was at that scene to see who did that? I told him I did not pull those covers off the bed, but I'm not going to tell him that I saw a spirit. You know, I mean, he'll think, you know, I'm thinking, God, he's going to think I'm crazy. He called everybody that was at that scene to see if they were the ones that drug the covers off that bed. And that kind of pissed me off a little bit, but it was just crazy. So we're waiting and the owner finally shows up and he's the old guy that, you know, I had to tell that I'm sorry for your loss. You know, your wife's passed away and, you know, and he's devastated. His house is burned up, you know, and, you know, he's just sitting there in his driveway and it's kind of one of those moments. It's like, feel like I'm still in surreal kind of, you know, kind of this surreal place because I've just experienced his wife's death. I feel like she made me experience her death. So I'm in a really weird place at that point. And I just came over and I just started taking his information, you know, getting everything, you know, for our report and everything. And then I said, you know what? I got to tell this man, there's a reason that she showed up to me and wanted somebody to know how she died. And I just had him sit down and I told him, I said, look, I was here 4 months ago when your wife died, you know, and then it was kind of like a dawning of understanding. Oh yeah, that's right. You guys were here. And I just told him, I said, I saw your wife in the house. She told me she had a heart attack. And she made me feel that, you know, and I just was trying to be comforting and everything. And he just started crying. He just had to sit down. He just couldn't believe that that happened. And, you know, how do you explain that to somebody? You know, when you have that kind of experience happen to you, it was probably, I thought I was at one point, I thought I was dying. I mean, it was like, I felt like I had a near death experience. It's one of the craziest things that has ever, ever happened to me. Everything happens for a reason, you know? I feel like that was her way of getting the message to him because they were so close, you know, because she was elderly, you know, and she'd been sick, you know, they didn't do an autopsy or anything because she was elderly, you know, and he probably went all that time wondering what happened, you know, did she have a stroke? Did she have a heart attack? You know, because close couples are like that, you know, and that was her way of getting that message to him. But that was very traumatic for me. So that I kind of had like minor pain for the rest of the shift until I got off duty that morning. And I went to my godmother's house and she got some holy water. I think she must've thrown a gallon of holy water on me because of the whole residual thing, you know, cause you know, if you're around a lot of dead energy like that, it's very, very bad for your health. And she just wanted to clean that off of me. I mean, the lady got her message across, you know, and we just lit a candle and said a prayer, you know, so her soul would go into the light and she cleaned me with holy water. And then I've been good ever since.
Paranormal 911. And that's season two, episode seven. I'm sure our listeners will be interested in that.
Absolutely.
Now, Melissa, I would like to thank you and all the first responders. You guys do a wonderful job. And I think the audience, well, I know the audience would agree with me on that. I also know you do long hours, but you find the time to write a couple of ebooks?
Yes, yes. I have two books on Amazon right now. It's a series. It's called Something in the Dark. I have the original one, which is called Gettysburg Ghosts, and another one that's Something in the Dark 2, Haunted Family. The one with about Gettysburg is our experiences. My husband and I used to do a lot of traveling in Pennsylvania for genealogy. And one of the places that we used to visit a lot for family history is Gettysburg, because we have family history there. And it's basically a book about all the experiences that we've had there. What we do is we go out into these haunted places, and we don't really use any equipment, because I'm an empath and he's very sensitive. He's a medium. And we just basically the impressions that we get from the area. And some of the experiences have been really crazy. I have been out in the middle of the battlefield by a place called Devil's Den, standing out there looking for a landmark. And I felt like I was shot in the hip. It actually knocked me down. There are all kinds of experiences that we've had out there that have, you know, been very eye-opening. You know, there's still a lot of residual energy. There's still a lot of entities that are there. And it's basically a 13-chapter book. And each chapter is an incident that happened to us that pretty much changed our view about that area of Pennsylvania, about the Gettysburg battlefield. The second one is Something in the Dark 2, Haunted Family. That is a little shorter book, but that one is about my personal experiences with my family after my grandmother died. My grandmother died in 1989. She did not believe in the spirit world. She did not believe in ghosts. But probably about a month after she died, she came back and showed up to pretty much everybody in my family in one way or the other. I saw her as a full body apparition once. My aunt actually had an experience where some clothes were folded, which was the craziest thing. She had a lot of experiences. My grandfather kind of came clean. My grandfather was this very no-nonsense World War II veteran. And I found out that he'd had experiences. He'd seen my grandmother in the house. And we all kind of got together and shared our experiences and what happened with my grandmother. I ended up, when we put his house up for sale, I ended up having to go. She was earthbound in that house. I didn't realize it. And I ended up having to go over there and invite her to come to my home, you know, so that we could move her on to the higher side of life. But that was a period of years that were very, very traumatic in my family. And we saw a lot of things. So, but you know, the sight and sensitivity that just runs in families. So
definitely worth checking out those books. I will put a link in the description for both of your titles. Good thing is they're ebooks. So, you know, you can go there and click the link and you can download it to Kindle right away.
They're also free on Kindle Unlimited right now.
Even better. Before we started recording today, you were telling me about when you were on the set of Paranormal 911. And do you want to tell the listeners about what happened in the hotel room?
Yes. So in October, the producers of Paranormal 911, they flew me up to Toronto and they put me up in a hotel in downtown Toronto. They overlooked the main square where I think they filmed like Good Morning Canada. And my room was on the 14th floor. And I only stayed one night, but what happened was it was about 11 o'clock at night. And my room had like a whole wall of windows, but it had this area that had like double pane glass that you couldn't get to, you know, you can't. And about 11 o'clock at night, I heard a knock on the window. And that's really strange, you know, and there was just a noise there. And, you know, and I'm thinking, well, you know, in these big cities, you know, maybe they have like these peregrine falcons, you know, you see these shows about these birds of prey and things that fly around, you know, cities with skyscrapers. So I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe it's a bird, you know, whatever. And I opened up the blinds to look out because it's nighttime and I wanted to check out some of the view. And there in the double pane glass. This is a this is between the planes that I don't have access to, is a very skinny, creepy handprint in like the water, the condensation in between the glass. And you can kind of see it going up. There's a couple of handprints there and they're just kind of going up. And it was the creepiest. It really, really creeped me out. And the next day when I did my filming for the show, I showed it to the producer and he was completely creeped out. And I think he even made a comment about someone else being in that room for another filming. And we didn't really talk about it, but he made another comment like, well, wasn't somebody else in that room and had an issue or, you know, but I never found out about that. But that was really creepy. So, but I took pictures of that and I put it on my Twitter. So you can see those on my Twitter.
Wow. That's confirmation right there. Is someone else stayed in the room and experienced the creepy things as well.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know if it was the room or if it's haunted people. Cause you know, that happens too. You know, you have haunted people. So not sure what happened there. I wish I'd asked more questions, but well, you know, what if, right?
I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your paranormal encounters today with us today, Melissa.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It was my pleasure. Really appreciate it. Have a great day.
I'm afraid that's all we've got time for tonight. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you are a first responder, either presently or in the past, and you have had an encounter and you would like to share it on this show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. I will be back next Monday with more witness encounters. Till then, stay safe and have a great week.
My best friend, we've been brothers all along to the end, and our paths crossed once before. It was many years ago before this war, and I gave you your name. It's what I've come so many miles to explain. You're the sun I never got to hold, and your name is Leopold. And at least before you killed me, you were told. Now I die at your side, and behold my only son as he cries. Your mother still waits for you. Please tell her that you killed me when this is through. She dreamed this most every night, and you can go and tell her that she was right. We both sat on her horse late at night. She always said it'd be you. Who would run me through and take my life? On a day I met my son and lost my wife. But that is why I came. Say hello, shake your hand, and tell you your name. Your name is Leopold. Leopold. Now, my son, take this land. Tell your mother I succeeded in my plan. I met my only son, and I gave to him my land and all my guns. You are Leopold.